Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Soon, America's largest city is going to pay for the nastiness of its inhabitants.
That's my baby!
When that day comes, when the slime starts to rise.
The Titanic just arrived.
When ghosts start arriving by the boatload.
Who are you gonna call?
Suck in the guts, guys, with the Ghostbusters. Hose them.
Who's gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Ghostbusters, too.
You're short? Belly button sticks out too far, and you're a terrible burden on your poor mother.
You're seeing things running through
Bill
your
Murray,
head.
Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, and Ernie Hudson in an Ivan Reitman film. Yeah, Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. You're the best, you're the beautiful, you're the only Ghostbusters.
Oh, who you gonna call?
When there's something strange in your neighbourhood, who are you going to call? Well, how about the exact same script from the first film? Yes, it's Ghostbusters 2, and joining me to read from his big book of occults is Rob Gilroy.
Hello.
Hello, Rob. It's an absolute pleasure having you on board.
It's delightful to be here. I'm very happy to be talking about Ghostbusters 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Because you picked this.
I picked this because I am a big fan of this, and I know you are not a big fan of this.
No, it's difficult. I've got a very complicated relationship with this film, which we'll get into as we progress. But yeah, I'm not. I'm more annoyed with it. I'm disappointed with it.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see why people feel that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, it will always have a special place in my heart.
It's just... I mean, this is actually good that you've picked this, because from an SEO point of view, because I think the new film's out soon.
Mm.
So this will get us some traction.
Yeah, I can't say that my taste in films is good, but I can say that it is optimised.
What did you think of Ghostbusters 2016?
I had a lot of time for it. I know a lot of people did, and I really enjoyed it because... Because they talked about making a third Ghostbusters for a long time.
Yeah.
And, like, Ghostbusters hit me at just the right time of being a kid and it just being, like, a fun sort of superhero-y thing, but a little bit more... A little bit naffer, which I really liked, the fact that they're effectively glorified plumbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really liked that feel of it.
Yeah.
So it was the perfect thing for me. So I was always excited about the thought of doing a third one. But then there was all this talk of like, well, we'll get Ben Stiller to be in it and we'll hand over to Will Ferrell and Eddie Murphy. And it just felt like a very obvious transition.
Mm.
But then suddenly when Paul Feig was announced and the cast were announced with Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, I didn't know what that Ghostbusters was. So I was open to that and I enjoyed it. And I get that it's not a perfect film.
Hmm.
But it kind of did everything it needed to do for me for a Ghostbusters film.
I think it would have been great if it had a director. If they've had someone who would step in after the 78th improv and gone, you know what, one's fine.
I do agree with that, and I do love Paul Feig and his films, but I would say it's lacking some of the control of some of the other films, which just are a bit tighter.
I was wondering if Paul Feig got into a DIY accident and chopped off one of his fingers, right? And then he got a pretend one. Would the headline be Paul Feig's faux thumb?
Well, Well, if it wasn't, then it's clear that journalism is dead.
I think we should go with that.
I would absolutely go with that.
So what they did then is they Dan Aykroyd went on Saturday Breakfast, whoever it was, and went, Paul Feig's a cunt, we're going to make a new one. He spent too much money. And they went and made Stranger Things.
Yeah, they did. I have more issues with Ghostbusters Afterlife. I enjoyed it for the most part until they literally started grave robbing to populate the cast.
Yes,
that sits very uneasy with me.
Yeah, yeah, it's very upsetting. And also, one of the characters is called Podcast, which I can never stop being amused by.
That's absolutely a draft one idea.
Absolutely,
we'll call him Podcast. And trust me, by the time we get to filming, we'll have nailed what that is. Yeah. But this is the sort of feel we've got. Yeah, no, they didn't. They ran with it. Podcast.
Because I bet they thought, well, we're getting Ivan Reitman's son to direct this, which is good because Ivan Reitman is always on set watching things all the time, so we might as well get his son. And we'll keep pretending we've got this thing called Ghost Core.
With the worst logo in the world.
The worst logo.
It's just
It's almost as bad as when they brought Ghostbusters out on Blu-ray and had the Ghostbusters logo doing a one symbol.
Yes. Well, when I rewatched Ghostbusters 2, I had that Blu-ray because I've not had it on Blu-ray, so I got that. And I knew that you hated that, and I am with you completely.
I find it very upsetting.
You don't like the Ghostbusters 2 logo, do you?
Well, I don't mind it in terms of a poster, but we'll get into this. I don't understand why it's on the uniform of the film. It doesn't make any sense.
No, I get that. But yeah, the idea of him holding two fingers up and then another finger on another hand, almost as if he's giving cricket scores, is very weird. Yeah,
he's saying, "Hello, I'm Ghostbusters 1." You don't need to do that. You're Ghostbusters. have some confidence in yourself.
But as long as we all agree to call it Ghostbusters 1, then I think it's fine.
It always reminds me of the rage I felt once when I was in a Blockbuster and a kid was in there and he picked up a copy of Alien and he said to his friend or his brother, "Have you seen this?" And he said, "What is it?" And he said, "It's Aliens 1." It was almost like one of those "let me at him" moments. Like, what are you doing?
I can see that. Have you seen this? It's the alien.
Aliens 1.
Aliens 1.
Anyway, so Ghostbusters 2 then.
Yes.
It's 5 years later. Boom.
Boom. Yeah, it's impactful.
Yeah.
Impactful.
And New York is full of angry people. "Hey, get out of my way, buddy. I'm a walking here." That's all.
I like that the overall premise for this story is going, you know how New York is universally considered a hellhole full of cunts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And this is what it is. Like, I enjoy that as a premise.
Yeah, I think, again, I mean, this is what we're going to get into later, but I think in terms of the idea and the villain, we've got that boxed off. Brilliant. Well done, everybody. But then what they've done is they've gone, we're going to get, it's like they're writing for Little Britain. They've gone, right, we're going to get the first script. Everything's in the same place, and we're just going to put different words there.
Yeah.
Because it's beat a remake of the first one.
It is. It is, and I can't deny that. And I, like, nostalgia-wise, I think I quite enjoy that now because there's a sort of real Ghostbusters Saturday morning cartoon vibe about every episode feeling a little bit similar.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it now. But I don't understand quite how they've set out to write a new film and just written the first one again. I don't know how that's happened.
Because they often used to do that in sequels. They'd go, it's like the Rocky V principle, where you've gone, isn't it brilliant being this thing? And then for the sequel, they've gone, let's take that all away and build it up again. It's like, no, we don't want that. We're enjoying this thing. It's like Spider-Man 2. He's like, oh, I haven't got my powers anymore. Well, I don't want to fucking watch you then. What's the point?
Do you know what people want? More origin.
Yeah, exactly.
I always find that,
So Dana's walking her baby. Where the babies come from, we find out later. But Dana has now got a baby.
For sure, yeah.
Now, this is my theory. My secret theory is, I don't think Sigourney Weaver was going to be in this.
Ooh.
I think my theory, and I've got nothing to back this up, and I'm probably wrong, but I think that this was going to be somebody else. And then at the last minute, Sigourney Weaver said she'd do it. Because Dana's in this is restoring paintings at a museum. And in the first film, she's a cellist.
Yeah, it was transferable skills.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. She's got a baby.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just feels like it's a different character that's been custom modeled to be Dana now. I could be wrong.
I can absolutely see that. Because part of me wondered if the original idea was that it was Vaitman's baby. And then they sort of decided it was a bit too long since the first one and they had to retrofit it. But yeah, really, they just wanted... They wanted her to have a baby and they wanted her to be in a museum. It didn't really matter whether it was Dana or not.
Yes, exactly. I think maybe Orv Ekman had really slow sperm. Bill Murray-faced sperm.
Yeah, well, it's probably pink and it's probably creeping through the cracks in the pavement as well, which is that's why it takes so long.
Oh, that's definitely Dan Aykroyd's sperm.
absolutely.
The pram goes through this ooze that comes through the crack in the ground.
Yeah.
And then races off evil pram on its own.
Yeah.
With baby Oscar in it, who's played by two kids.
That's, yeah.
Not standing on the shoulders of one another, they just take turns.
Not too it tiny. It would be great if they had the trench coat and the fedora throughout the whole thing.
Tragically, though, one of them is now dead.
Yes, yeah, I did hear that. That was very sad. That is very sad. But bold to lead a film with the potential death of a baby.
Well, exactly.
Especially one that was trying to be a little bit more kid-centric.
I mean, they might have just let Viggo possess him. He might still be alive now.
Well, potentially.
So the pram goes mad, goes into the road. Dana saves the baby because it just stops. Yep. All the while, she's surrounded by people going, "Hey, I want a coffee. Get out of my way." That sort of
thing. They're really nailing that thing that New Yorkers don't care about a baby in peril.
That's right.
What's this fucking baby doing here?
It's a skunk pussy baby. Robert De Niro there.
Nailed it. Oh.
So then we get the opening credits with the original the original music.
Yeah.
And that's another thing is missing from this film.
It is. It could be there more. We'll go on to Run DMC, but unsurprisingly, I am a fan. But I definitely found that was what was missing with Afterlife.
Yeah.
Any sense of, like, enjoyment was squeezed from it.
Yeah. Well, I got to be honest. This film came out when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I had the soundtrack. Because in those days, I would buy the soundtrack of the film.
Yeah.
And I had the soundtrack. And I would play it a lot while I was playing the game Chase HQ.
Nice.
Very married in my mind. And I liked the soundtrack. I haven't got any problems with the songs in this film. It's the actual soundtrack itself. Like, the first film's got a very specific soundtrack by Elmer Bernstein. Mm. It's just really, really good. And in this film, it's a bit chintzy and keyboardy and Randy Edelman.
It's a bit Randy Edelman-y.
It is, yeah.
There's an odd thing going on where it's like some of the score leans a bit, maybe a bit darker than the first one did, and then other bits go as far the other way as possible.
Yes.
And it's saccharine and like you're watching a very poor rom-com that you didn't sign up for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I bought the single as well, the Bobby Brown single, Classic. On Your Own.
I love On Your Own.
It's great. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. So Dana, so then we go to Ray and Winston in the car, and you're meant to be thinking they're on the way to bust a ghost.
Yeah.
And they're like,
they're not busting ghosts.
And they're not. It's a children's party.
They're dealing with little pricks.
What a fucking drop. This is like Colin Pillinger, who was doing Beagle 2, wanking businessmen off when it failed. This is what the drop is here. Because they saved the city, and they've got this bullshit plot that no one believes they save the city, even though 100-foot marshmallow man walked through the city.
Yeah. I mean, if it was set in modern day, the idea that a bunch of politicians would turn around and go, that didn't happen, would be very apt. But yeah, the idea that collectively the whole city has agreed that whatever happened didn't really happen and these were the people to blame is,
Walter Peck goes on telly and says, they all came on me. That's what happened.
Yeah, I've been covering these guys' spunk. Trust me when I tell you that they're not real.
Yeah, busting made them feel good, I tell you that. All over my head.
Yeah, busting it up, did it.
So we get our first cameo here, which is Jason Reitman as a boy.
Yeah.
He says, my dad thinks you're full of crap and that's why you went out of business. And I was like, yeah, well, you nearly did that yourself when you made the other film, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he's held on to that grudge against Ghostbusters for a long time.
He has. Now, put yourself back to 1989. How old were you in 1989, Rob?
I was 2 years old.
Two. Okay, well, never mind. 1989, I can assure you, if you were at a kid's party and they said, who are you going to call? The kids would not say He-Man.
No.
He-Man was long gone by 1989.
Yeah.
Long gone.
It really feels dated, does that reference? I don't...
It feels like a man in his late 40s has written a film about children and gone, what are kids like? He-Man, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And even when I was a kid, when I was watching this, because we taped it off TV, so I think I saw this when I was younger a lot more than I'd seen the first one, because it was slightly softer.
It is.
But I remember thinking at the time, like, He-Man, I call bullshit on that.
Yeah.
No one is waiting for He-Man to walk into a room.
The He-Man film came out 2 years before this, and no one went to see it, because it was long dead. Like, I think even Transformers was dead at this point. In fact, the kids would probably be saying, the real Ghostbusters. We want them.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the problem.
He'd have to come in with his hair brown and be voiced by the man who voiced Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And Winston would have to be Arsenio Hall, who did the
costume. And I mean, bless him for shaving his moustache to try and draw comparisons.
Well, this is what they've done in this film, isn't it? They've tried to real Ghostbuster it a bit.
Yes. And I think, like I say, as I got older, that is the element of it that I enjoy, that it just feels like we're dipping in for another adventure and then we're dipping back out again.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard to explain some of the choices that they've made and going so hard in on trying to make real people like a cartoon.
Well, after the party, because all the kids despise them.
Yeah.
And again, what are the parents thinking? All week, that kid, Jason Reitman's gone, you know what, I bloody love He-Man. She's gone, well, you know what, I'm going to get the Ghostbusters because they're cheaper.
Yeah. But it doesn't even make sense, really, when I think about it, in the logic of the film. Everyone has collectively agreed that they were hucksters.
Yeah.
And yet... A mother is still willing to pay these men in boiler suits to turn up at a house because she thinks the kids will be impressed.
Who would you have wanted at your kids' party when you were a kid? What was your thing?
I would have wanted... Well, yeah, if I couldn't have the real Ghostbusters, then I would absolutely... I would have gone mental for Mr. Blobby, which...
Right.
Yeah. That's...
Imagine if all week you're thinking, I'm having a party the weekend, Mr. Blobby's coming, and fucking Uri Geller turns up. Would you like me to bend your spoon? Get out. My dad says you're full of crap.
And he'd be right. He'd be right to say.
I mean, the only reason you'd want him there is potentially he might bring Michael Jackson.
Well, yeah, that would be true. And that wouldn't necessarily be the blessing that you thought it was.
No. If anything, you're getting the cat amongst the pigeons, aren't you, there, really?
Absolutely. But do you think Yuri would bring his own spoons? She's like,
no.
Look, the contract says I'll do 15 spoons. If you want 18 spoons, you've got to provide your own spoons.
It's been my rider.
I feel like he would. Yeah.
I remember reading.
That's my rider.
I read a story about Uri Geller once and I couldn't believe the man. Do you know the story of Susie Lamplew? She was an estate agent. She went to show someone a house, disappeared, feared murdered. Parents going out of their mind. Never been found, right? So Uri Geller came round. Offered to help them find her. And it said in the story that he was no help, but at the end of the session, offered to bend some cutlery for them.
I mean, that's awful, but that's glorious. If you have one overriding characteristic that you can wheel out whenever things get
It's like Ron Jeremy going, I'm sorry I've been no help, but I can get a boner and come anytime I want. Would you like me to do that now?
Oh, God.
So they get paid from the party and they go off. And then with a little bout of exposition in the car, Winston mentions they were sued for property damage for blowing up that building.
Landlords for you.
Presumably the street as well, where everybody witnessed the street literally open up and cars fall into it. The Bishop of New York, I guess that's what he was, tells the mayor in that film that he was talking to a dead man for hours. Okay, so the Ghostbusters did that as well, I guess.
Presumably, yeah.
And so they're out of business and they're not allowed to investigate anything for years, apparently.
Yes, that's true. I do kind of like the... It feeds into that thing that they're always a slight underdog, which I enjoy. Mm. But yeah, there's a lot of like having to reset the stakes again, which I suppose every sequel has to deal with. But yeah, it's... For a film that hits the ground running fairly quickly in terms of, look, potentially dead kid, pink slime, Sigourney Weaver's back, like, it then takes a bit of a while for the actual ghostbustering to happen.
I just think Kids Party's a wrong... If you're listening, Dan Aykroyd, Kids Party, wrong move. You should have been, like, doing a public appearance on TV and been humiliated or something like that. Kids Party.
Or, you know, maybe they were... You know, maybe it was a Hindu. They just turned up as strippers. That would have been...
The sight of the naked Dan Aykroyd, apart from the proton pack, wobbling about on stage with his little knob out to Ghostbusters, but a karaoke version with no singing.
That's what it should have been.
Ernie Hudson could have recreated that famous picture of him at a convention where he's bumming himself, but he'd be bumming, bumming Dan Aykroyd instead.
Yeah, it should have been much bleaker. They should have been clearly on their arse end. Come on, guys. Give me $50 and I'll do whatever you want.
That being Boogie Nights. Like, I want to watch Race Dance jerk off.
Kids, you want some exoplasm? I don't know why it's kids when they're strippers now.
Not kids,
I'm sorry.
Not kids.
No.
Disclaimer now.
Hey, Dollface, you want to see some ectoplasm? That'll be it.
Dogs and cats living together. That's what I call my cock and balls. Meanwhile... Egon Spengler is running some sort of torture lab where he's playing with the emotions of children and adults.
Yeah, it's like a privatised Beatles about.
It is.
So he's getting proper funding to fuck people up.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, at least it's consistent with his character. I feel like that's the bit that Harold Ramis wrote.
Yeah.
He's gone, I'd still be a site. Dan Aykroyd's gone, well, I've written a bit for me in Winston where we're doing children's parties. What are you doing, Harold? And he's gone, I'm still a scientist because that's what we are. What are you doing? Wouldn't we have gone back and been scientists again? No? Oh, no, you're running a fucking bookshop and smoking a pipe, you prick.
Yeah, with the glasses chain, which just cements the look.
Fucking Sue Pollard bitch running around New York. So Egon's running this experiment and Dana comes to see him and tells him all about what's happened. And he says, well, I'll look into that for you. But she says, do me a favour, don't tell Peter. And then she asks about Peter. And she says they lost touch with Peter and then she got married and had a baby. And when you're watching that in the cold light of 2024 as a grown-up, you're like, this is really clunky exposition, this scene. It's like they've done that thing where they try to distract you with visuals while someone just dumps loads of exposition. And when you're a kid, when you're a 12-year-old, you're watching the visuals going, I'm not listening to what she's saying.
Yeah.
But as a 47-year-old man. Yeah, bring out the puppy. As a 46-year-old man, I'm sitting there going, God, this is really bad. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I'm also thinking like 5 years... to meet somebody, get married, have a baby, and then split up feels like a busy time. Like, Dana's been through enough. The last thing she needs is to welcome that prick back into her life.
Well, I'm guessing at some point that lost husband will probably appear in one of the Ghostbuster sequels because they're that bankrupt for ideas, they'll probably turn up as a ghost.
Yeah, it'll be in the trailer as a voice that's talking over it.
Hello,
I
Dana.
Never liked those Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to a man you've never seen in your life and that you're supposed to feel something for.
It'll be like that Star Trek sequel where Benedict Cumberbatch goes, I am Khan. And everyone in the universe is like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
Because you haven't been in these ones. So they go to Ray's bookshop. And Ray's
a cult.
Ray's a cult. He sure is.
Which I really love that.
Hmm. Oh no, first, before they go there, sorry, Peter's doing his show World of the Psychic, which is a good bit of Bill Murray doing a bit of foolishness, which is always fun.
Yes, I really enjoy this bit. I think, despite the BBC snooker backdrop
and
John Virgo in the wings dusting his cue,
you can't see him.
You can't, but it's implied. I really enjoy this bit, and I think... Because when I was watching it, I was like, I realised I don't know who that actress is that's playing Elaine.
Mm.
And I had to look her up, and I didn't really recognise her from much that else I'd seen, but she's brilliant.
Yeah, it's Chloe Webb.
It's Chloe Webb. Yeah, yeah, she's fantastic.
I knew her from, she was Nancy in the Sid and Nancy film. But she's also Danny DeVito's girlfriend in Twins.
Which is
the same
is.
Director as this film. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, these are two good bits, because you get Kevin Dunn saying that the end of the world will be New Year's Eve. Ah, he was right, wasn't he? Nearly.
No, that's a nice little bit of foreshadowing for you.
Good bit of foreshadowing. And then Elaine has another bit of foreshadowing, because she says the end of the world will be 2016, which is when the Lady Ghostbusters film came out. And all the men died. All the men who like Ghostbusters were like, I've died, I'm not watching that. And that She's man right, from yeah. Cinemassacre video, Angry Video Game Man, was like, I'm not reviewing it because it's got women in it.
Oh, yeah. It would have been better if many people had been wiped from the planet at that point.
It was a really unpleasant period to be on the internet.
Yeah. But also when Afterlife was announced, there was a real, like, huh, about time that they're getting things back on track. It's just really horrible.
Yeah.
For something that I love very dearly as an entity, like, there's so much horribleness around it, which is just not nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, as a template and as a principle, there's nothing wrong with the 2016 film. I just think it's a really bad film. That's where I fall on it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. So, yeah, she's got a nice story about an alien seducing her.
In a Ramadarin.
Yeah, it made the spaceship look like a Ramadarin. It's good. It's good stuff, this.
It's great. And she does it so well in that way that she's starting to not believe herself when she's talking.
It's just all really good. And then as he leaves the studio, the mayor comes walking in and doesn't want to be seen with Peter because he's an embarrassment.
Lenny. What's he like?
Lenny. And then we meet the assistant Hardemeyer.
Yeah. Walter Peck 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. The same script we're doing again.
Yeah.
But I love this actor. He's always very good.
Yeah, Kurt Fuller's, yeah.
Yeah, Kurt
Fuller. He's the right level of sleaze that it feels slightly different to before. But yeah, fundamentally, it's exactly the same.
He's, in a weird way, he's playing a horrible character in this, but he will always be redeemed for the character he plays in Wayne's World, which I adore. Because he gets involved and gets in the spirit with everybody, and I love him for that. Anyway.
I thought you were going to say he redeems himself at the end when he's hugging everybody in Times Square and singing along. To Auld Lang Syne for the gospel.
Too fucking late. It's too late. He didn't get covered in spunk, did he? Well, he might have done that off camera.
Yeah. It was a hectic time. Everyone was happy. Everyone was high on their own supply.
They were. 1989. So then Dana, we see her working in a museum restoring art.
Yes.
And we meet Janosch.
Janosch Poha.
Peter McNichol.
I think... How much you enjoy this film rests probably on how much you enjoy his performance.
Yes. I think he's great. And
I love him.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Just the right level of weirdness.
Yeah. I mean, he's always good. Yeah. He's actually one of the best things in that Mel Brooks film, Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yes. He plays Renfield. He's amazing in that.
Yeah.
He's absolutely fantastic.
When he eats that cockroach and Harvey Corman's like, did you just eat... What? He's got that leg coming out of his mouth. Did you just eat a bug? I did not.
I love that scene. I do.
It's I've in got your a... mouth fighting for its life.
Oh, it's just brilliant.
He's wonderful, and he has some great lines in this, like when they say to him, where are you from? And he goes, the Upper West Side.
The Upper West Side? Yeah. I love it. Oh, he's so good. Mm. But also, one thing I would like to call out is Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd's ability to name characters is kind of second to none. There is no one that gets that level of specific weirdness.
Yeah, and also I would say that him being in this removes the need for Lewis Tully in this film, because he's basically being Lewis Tully.
Yeah.
He's Lewis Tully Port. He's doing the same role. He's creeping Dana out constantly.
Yeah.
While being eccentric.
Yes, it's exactly that. And I'd not really thought of it in those terms until I rewatched it for this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, of course he is. He's just Lewis Tully.
Yeah, they've just copied the first film. Yeah.
Yeah. But then they find a reason to bring Louis Tully back in.
Which is him getting wanked off, which we'll get to later. Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's not spoil that yet.
No, God, we don't want to spoil that. So then the painting...
We'll get to his river of slime.
Oh, yeah. Oh. He was very cross and then he was happy. the painting moves at this point.
It does. Doing what I like to call GoldenEye head.
Yes.
Like the N64... Just peeping out.
I like the way that it would turn out. I'd like the plot to be that it turned out that it wasn't Viggo the Carpathian. It's just that someone painted their favourite character in Die Hard. Because the guy who plays Viggo is one of the terrorists in Die Hard.
It's true. But when I was watching it this time, I couldn't get Craig T. Nelson out of my head.
Oh, so God,
now
he does.
He's just evil Craig T. Nelson.
Mm. He's also the guy in the Mouth of Madness whose son gets killed. Yes,
I haven't seen that, but I will take your word for it.
Yeah, he just looks—he's a weird guy. I think he's German. So Ray and Egon, they meet up at Ray's occult book shop.
Ray's occult, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing some research, and then Peter arrives, and Peter's books come in, which is Magical Paths to Fortune and Power.
Yeah, and that's the one. That's the great book.
I don't think Peter would buy that.
Well.
I think Venkman's far too confident to buy things like that, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's a very on-the-nose point. If it was made today, then it would probably be written by Stephen Bartlett.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a very high likelihood that people would buy that book. But yeah, Peter's not... Well, I was watching it and I thought he wouldn't buy that book, or potentially he would buy it, but he wouldn't read it.
Yeah.
He would just be too lazy to even bother reading it.
He's too much of a con artist and a chancer to actually do any studying, I think. Anyway, doesn't matter. Yeah. He comes in and he tortures Ray by pulling his ears to find out that they're doing research for Dana.
Yeah, this is like the Three Stooges element of the film.
Yeah, and he says, "My Dana?" And I'm like, didn't you fucking split up with her 5 years ago? So, haven't you moved on?
Clearly not. Clearly he's still holding a flame for her. But it's Sigourney Weaver, so you can't blame him.
No, absolutely. I'd be livid if I'd let Sigourney Weaver go 5 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway, so they go to her apartment.
Yeah.
And Peter sneaks in. And again, we get Bill Murray just doing another bit, which is fun.
Yes. This whole scene has so many solid jokes and character moments that just kind of get everyone back together and get things kind of working really well. I have a lot of time for it.
Especially when Egon says, "I'd like to run some gynecological tests on the mother," and he says, "Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't?" Yeah.
Oh dear. It's so funny.
I also like when he asks Peter to get a stool sample and Peter goes, "Business or personal?"
But we find out that the reason they split up is that Peter kept introducing Dana as the old ball and chain.
Yeah, because he's a husband from the 50s.
I don't buy it. But anyway, but we also get Egon saying he didn't have any toys when he was a kid. And Ray says, "Not even a slinky." He says, "I had part of a slinky, but I straightened it."
I do think that the entire franchise is missing a young Egon-style spin-off.
Yeah.
There's just a baby with Harold Ramis's head, like a good foot of hair and massive glasses. And just exploring that world of him straightening slinkies and inspecting his own shit.
Isn't that sort of what they did in Ghostbusters Afterlife, though?
Well, it might as well have been. Yeah. It might as well have been. Ugh.
Because he had the little girl, the Egon, getting directed by a ghost Egon.
Yeah. Like, but again, I didn't mind that as a concept because it felt different enough from just finding another four funny men. But, ugh. It just stopped short of showing the man.
Yeah, well, it didn't though, did it, sadly?
No, it should have done, but it didn't. Ooh.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Anyway, so the Ghostbusters go to look at where the buggy incident happened.
Yeah.
And they find like a bit of ooze, so they decide to dig up the street.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of very good tactile New York filming in this film, which feels like it doesn't take long for that to kind of start to disappear from films.
Yeah.
You feel very much all the locations where they are, which is really nice.
Well, also, I think it feeds into the fact, which is another reason why I didn't vibe with Afterlife, is I feel like New York's part of the character of who they are in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think that's kind of also feeds into why this score doesn't work quite as well.
Mm.
Because the first film has got a very, like, it's almost scoring the city rather than individual characters. This feels much more character-driven in the way that the melodies kind of come in, which just doesn't quite feel right for it.
Yeah, and I think also another part of that is that this is 89, you know, we're leading into the 90s, and the first one's got such a gritty 80s feel to it. It's 84, it's that almost perfect midpoint of that decade, and this is coming out of that decade, and I think that also takes some of the character out of it in the wash, if you like, but...
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I was thinking there's a big thing about New York being gritty and horrible and rude and dirty, but actually it's probably never looked better on the cinema. Like, it looks really clean, really tidy.
Mm.
Like, everyone looks to be having an idyllic life. They're just being pricks to each other.
No one's getting spunked on from a great height.
It's, yeah, that's absolutely what's missing.
Yeah.
That, well, it's happening. You just have to know it's happening.
Yeah. Meanwhile, so they dig up the street, and then we get the bit, which is always fun, that you have to have in any kind of 80s comedy, where a person of, in this case, a policeman, turns up and our heroes pretend to be workmen.
It's true. It's true. But I realised as well, this feels like a deliberate attempt to let them riff a bit in different characters.
Yeah.
Like... Because they tried to do it the first one, and they shot a scene of Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd as two homeless men
in the park.
And it felt very sort of Saturday Night Live-y, and then they got rid of it quite rightly because it would have slowed the film down. Mm. But it feels like a chance to let them do that without kind of taking the story off track.
Who told you to stop cutting? That's what he says.
It did. Ziggy, though, is very good.
Oh, it's great. It's perfect representation of their characters, isn't it? Because Peter takes the lead, Ray joins in, and then they say to Egon, isn't that right? And he just goes, yo, which I enjoy, because he wouldn't be able to do that voice.
No, it's the thing that I enjoy about it the most, as it being a sequel, is it really just picks up all the characters and runs with them quite quickly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't let down on that score. Like, it is too similar to the first one, but fundamentally, if you've come to see those characters again, you're not disappointed in what you're given.
Yeah, I think those elements are fine, and the plots, I think, is pretty strong. It's just such a lazy retread. It's just so annoying. But anyway, meanwhile, Janos is back in the museum, and Vigo's painting comes to life.
Yes.
Now, voiced by Max von Sydow.
Yes, it is.
Legend has it that the actor... thought he, they were gonna, it was a bit of a David Prowse situation. He went to the premiere or when he first saw it, thinking, here's my big moment. Oh, and they've dubbed him with Max von Sydow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could have been Gilbert Gottfried. So in that sense, he's probably come out of it better. But
if it wasn't Bernie Clifton, everyone would be like, well, not Bernie Clifton. Who... could have been Bernie Clifton. Bernie Clifton.
Yeah. that would have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roy kept doing Max. Yeah. I was thinking of the one who kept missing out words. I forgot his name. Never mind.
I don't know.
Could have been worse, is what we're saying.
It could have been worse. But yes, apparently that guy had quite an interesting life. I seem to remember reading his IMDb bio a while ago and it just being full of near misses with fame and fortune.
Yeah. Yes, there's kind of a... There's a sort of sad... There's a couple of sad stories coming out of the cast of Die Hard, really. He was one of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's got the Max von Sydow's voice on a river of blood.
The Scourge of Carpathia.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Thanks. I've been working on that.
You should be in Ghostbusters 3.
I should be in Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah. So Viggo needs a child, but not like that.
They should have had that dialogue in. Listen, I need a child. It sounds weird, but trust me on this. Just get me the kid. Nothing's going to happen. Just
so what do you need the child for? I need to get inside the child. Not like that.
Listen, in this climate, I know it might sound weird, but these are the things I need. A kid. That's it.
That's it. And preferably a baby. Oh, God.
Yeah, but why a baby? There is no reason for him... Especially when we find out later that he then possesses Ray, a human-grown adult man's body. Why he decides to put himself in the body of a one-year-old to do what? Shit and eat rusks for...
I've got questions, yeah. He basically just likes sucking on titties.
It's absolutely that.
Yeah.
Listen, I need a baby... his mum's got to, you know, she's got to be quite well. And don't worry about it. Just get the baby and we'll deal with it. Trust me, it's all part of the
baby of Michelle Pfeiffer or Sigourney Weaver. Which one's had a baby? Sigourney Weaver. That one, then.
Yeah. 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 So Dirty Craig T. Nelson just wants to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to put himself inside a child. So Ray gets a sample of the ooze when he's under... So we cut back to him dangling under the ground. Now, fans of the Ghostbusters 2 computer game will remember this bit very well, because the first level of the game is you as Ray dangling on this cable, having to swing left and right and go up and down and not get hit by the slime or the monsters that are down there.
Oh, I think I remember playing that,
It's a fucking shit game. I hated it so much. First game's really fun. Oh, that's terrible. So he goes down there and he gets... There's like pink hands start coming out trying to grab him. And he accidentally kicks a pipe that falls onto a power line and it causes a citywide blackout.
Let's not mince words. He has a bit of a hissy fit because they're not pulling up quick enough.
Yeah.
And instead of just going up calmly, he then starts to flail around.
Yeah.
So really, it's all Ray's fault.
And a 1989 Dan Aykroyd flailing around is going to cause significant damage. 1981 Dan Aykroyd or 1984 Dan Aykroyd, you're probably talking a couple of broken... bits of mud here and there, but
absolutely.
It's like an underground Godzilla.
Exactly. It's like watching Augustus Gloop again. Oh. Just going back up that chute.
Oh God. You mean up the chocolate chute?
Well, I didn't want to say it, but yes, absolutely.
So they get they're arrested and they go to court.
Yeah.
The judge is really angry. It's a very cross man.
Yeah. And he goes very quickly to talking about being burning people at the stake.
That's right.
Which is not what you want from someone in the legal profession.
Not really. And also, the Ghostbusters have decided to appoint an accountant as their lawyer for comedy purposes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very funny scene. But again, it just speaks to me the fact that they don't really have a job for Lewis in this film. So they've made him one.
Yeah, I'd have been quite content if it was just this.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, he just turns up for this because they don't have anyone else that he's prepared to defend them.
Yeah.
And then he's gone again. It's just a nice little cameo. Yes. But But yeah, it's a very funny scene, and it leads into what I think is potentially one of the best Ghostbuster sequences ever put on film.
You mean the Scolari brothers?
The Scolari brothers? Yeah. Oh, I love everything about it.
I gave them the chair!
Yeah. Do something! It's like, oh, you've changed your tune 2 minutes ago. You were going to burn them at the stake.
Well, that's the theme of this film, isn't it? Well, ghost rubbish, don't believe you. Go, get me the Ghostbusters.
It's not so much New York being evil or mean to each other. It's just being fucking hypocritical when it suits them.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Ghosts do exist. You can have your license back, but then give it a week and then they're gone again.
I like the way there, without realising it, you've played it as Reese Shearsmith.
That's my go-to voice.
Yeah, that was good.
That's what it should have been. Mm. Listen, guys, I'm not doing this. It's fucking shit. Get out.
Can you imagine him as a Ghostbuster?
Yeah.
I don't want to say too much because I get the impression with Reese Shearsmith he's a bit like the angry candy man. If you say his name, he'll just appear and say, fuck off.
So, I think he would, I don't think he would take too kindly to that. Plus, Jeff Tipps as a Ghostbuster would be the only way to go with Ghostbusters.
Someone could replace all the scenes of Lewis Tully wandering around with Jeff Tipps and do the bit where he goes to London for the first time. Oh, in absolute heaven.
That would work. That would be. And also, if at the moment the ghost came out, he just went, you haven't got this cunt, don't you?
Or he goes to Janine, I've got to go. Ghostbusters are faxing me some emails.
Yeah, talking about being bunned by some bin men.
You had rapped to the Scolari brothers, didn't you? I'll never stop laughing at that joke that he's terrified when Jeff comes round because he's scared of bin men. Yeah. They go in, his house is full of bin bags, but they never explain why. And then when he mentions about Brian got bummed by loads of bin men, you're like, oh my God, he's hoarding bin bags because he's terrified of the bin men. Such a genius joke. Anyway.
And also there's a long-running joke that the only reason he thinks Brian is gay is because he wore a pink tie once. Oh,
that's right, yeah. I love Jeff Tipps. I'd have loved the third series of League of Gentlemen was obviously episodic. Their own little tales of the unexpected type things. I'd love it if, in the old style of old comedies, if one of them was just picked up for its own series, and I'd love Jeff Tipps just in London as its own series. It would have been so good. Because I just love that character. It's one of my favourite comedy characters. It's up there with Partridge for me. It's just so layered and angry. Just, it's like pure, it's like if they pure uncut Reese Shearsmith in one character.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's what really works about the, moving on to another film, The League of Gentlemen's Apocalypse.
Yes.
Just letting him work as a fully rounded comedy person is very funny.
Adore him. Anyway, so the Scolari brothers, as you say, really good because it's a kind of a non-egregious combination of the cartoon and the films because they're very cartoony like ghosts, but they really work.
Yeah, I remember finding it quite unsettling as a kid.
I bet, yeah.
It was, and it's just, but also just that thing of, which I think Dan Aykroyd in particular was probably very good at, was grounding a lot of his ghosts and a lot of the mythology around it in things that felt quite real.
Yeah.
So just the very fact that they were actual murderers that then got electrocuted just gives it a slightly darker tinge.
Yeah, and they're a bit like the other ghosts from Casper the Ghost, aren't they? They're a bit, one's fat, one's thin, and which also in.
He's
here? Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Who are you going to call? Someone else.
Dan Aykroyd.
He's got a moustache in it. It looks like Jeff Tipps.
Listen, I'm not managed to get rid of the ghosts, but it doesn't matter, all right? Put a blanket over him, it'll be fine.
I won the mums.
Well, I'm here, do you want some Crystal Lynn vodka? Trust me, it's great. I'm not pissed in it.
For a while now, Dan Aykroyd, every time I see him on something, he's just there going, ah, UFOs are real, ghosts are real, buy vodka. That's his thing now. And let's make another Ghostbusters film.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even convinced that his heart is in making more Ghostbusters.
No. No. But it's obviously quite nice to still be appearing in them.
Well, yeah.
Because it got to the point where he was like going, right, Ghostbusters 3 is this film, we all go to hell. And then it was eventually, he'd been wound down so much, he was eventually like, we're going to pass the torch off to Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you're going to be in it. Okay, fine, good.
Yeah. It's the only way to keep quality control of it. I say that hasn't turned out to be the case.
No.
But, yeah, it's...
Ugh. Anyway, so Sclary Brothers, then. They go mad around the court. You get that lovely effect of the lady being obviously on a wire, but she goes through a solid door, which is very good.
Yeah, that's really lovely done. Also wearing stockings, which feels like a staple of 80s comedies.
Yeah. Wanking men directors everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly yeah,
that. Or bloomers. If you're over a certain age, you have to be bloomers.
Yes, yeah.
Like, you're either Molly Sugden or Sigourney Weaver, not anything in the middle.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I say to myself when I look in the mirror every morning.
So, yeah, they bust them. They bust the Sclary brothers because they're all their gears on the table as evidence.
Yeah, two in the box, ready to go.
This, I hate this. It's like they've practiced this. They were like in jail, like, if we do get a chance to bust a ghost, do you think we should say this?
Yeah, I know, but I like it. You like it.
Two in the box, ready to go. We be fast, they be slow.
It feels like something they've said a lot when they've been busting ghosts before they lost their jobs. Mm. And they've brought it back. It's like their own little shorthand. I like it.
Do you get the impression, though? Mm.
Go on.
No, go on.
I was going to say, I also like the Dore Egon joke.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
It's absolutely solid.
That's from the first film, isn't it?
No, it's from this one.
Oh, no, since this one, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, do you get the... I always get this thing, knowing, because I know that Bill Murray didn't want to do this.
Yeah.
So I always get the feeling that he's just like not... His heart is not in it at all. And
yeah.
You can tell because when they get a chance to get covered in goop and slime layer, he's just like, nah, you're all right.
Yeah, absolutely make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't want anywhere near me.
There's a definite feeling that he's not quite feeling it. But then that said, I also think this one gives him a couple of different colours to play and he does it quite well.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, he's always great. And this is the thing I've got with this film, right? Is that I dislike what they did, what the choices they made. I like a lot of elements of it, and I do find it it's a comfort film. Like, if I've got it on, everything feels nice in the world. Do you know what I mean? But I just wish it was better. I wish they'd have done more with it.
Yeah, I think so. They could have broadened out some of the world and some of the ideas.
Because the first one's just bursting at the seams with creativity.
Yeah.
And this is like, well, we don't want to go beyond that. We've already established it. But you could have done so much more with it.
It's true, yeah. They don't seem to kind of expand much in terms of the specifics. Yeah, I get that.
But I think that was a general theme of sequels around the time. It was just like Home Alone 2, for instance, exactly the same film as the first one, and Die Hard 2, and et cetera, et cetera.
But what it has in its favour, which the more recent Ghostbusters don't, and even Ghostbusters 2016, is just that constant need to remind you of the first one.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite good at just leaving things as they were.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, not... The thing that really got me with Afterlife was the moment where Egon's granddaughter pulled out a Nestle Crunch Bar.
Oh, my God,
and it was, like,
a
moment of emotion. It's just... Fuck off. It's just nonsense.
There's a bit in the trailer for the new one as well where Venkman comes around the corner and he's wearing the red jacket from the first one. And he's like, hey, everybody. And he's like, why does he have to be wearing the red jacket from a 40-year-old film?
Yeah, it's just this a real horrible need to just remind you of every facet of an old
thing. I'd forgotten about the crunch bars. Like, that's 1 second of a moment from the first film.
Yeah, and it's a lovely touch in the first film that just gives it a bit of character.
Beautiful moment. You've earned
but this. No one's gonna be like, oh, do you remember when Grandad used to eat all of these fucking crunch bars every time he'd
also,
try to drill a hole in his head?
Worse than that, it's like he's gone, that's a beautiful thing from Peter Venkman, I'm gonna keep that forever. he collects mold, you know, spores, molds, and fungus, and Nestle crunch bars by the looks of it.
That's exactly what, he just doesn't throw things away, that's his problem. He's a hoarder.
Imagine if they were like, oh, we found this beautiful Nestle Crunch Bar, and they found a log, and it's like, I've been putting this bar up my ass for 40 years. Peter gave it to me. I can't tell him, but it's what I've been doing. He's the only person that's ever praised me.
Yeah, I think so. He's going to... There's something more going on with that Crunch Bar. If he's keeping hold of it for that long.
Oh,
It's gone places. It's seen things.
Also, I don't like the idea of Egon fucking and having a baby. I feel like out of all the Ghostbusters, he's the one that would have a baby least, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it really undersells the character of Janine, who's still hanging around sorting out his shit for him.
Yeah.
Why won't she like go off and be with someone that makes her happy? She's
with Lewis in this one.
Well, yeah.
What happened to him?
Ready to have a baby. Yeah. With very little prompt.
Fucking ready to do anything with him. Fucking piss on him. Pull out his teeth.
That's the list she gave him.
Yeah.
Listen, that's what we're doing. We're pissing first and then we're going to play it.
So we get another montage. I reckon if you lined up the two films, it's probably the exact same time code.
It is.
The same fucking thing. It's another montage of them busting ghosts. Because now suddenly there weren't any ghosts before, but now there's fucking loads of them.
Yeah. These things that people all collectively agreed didn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly back. Yeah.
Suddenly there's the jogger. There's the Jim Mix jogger. He was a famous jogger who died of a heart attack and everyone thought it was funny.
Oh, really?
It's based on a real story, yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's the antiques that are floating.
Yeah.
They use lasers with that. Don't know what that's about. Looks fun, though.
I like that. Yeah. It does look fun. And there's something about Peter wearing sunglasses and the new grey jumpsuit.
I like the grey jumpsuit. It's just the logo.
I know. I do get the logo. It doesn't make
any sense.
It doesn't. In the world of the film, they're saying second chance.
Oh yeah, or they're just saying peace.
Yeah, it's true. But you know, every company has a shitty rebrand at some point.
There should have been
like when Cocoa Pops became Choco Krispies.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And Sugar Puffs are now just called Honey Monster or something. Honey Monster.
Honey Monster. Yeah, Honey Monster Puffs or something.
Yeah.
And
he says, "I'm not a puff." Even though I did live with Henry McGee for a long time, but he was Macara.
just unnecessarily defensive.
You're a breakfast cereal. I know, but I've got a reputation.
No one doesn't go Tony the Tiger, do they? They say, oh, it's fucking great with him. Oh, but with Tiger, me, it's all.
Tony the Tiger didn't clearly live with homosexual. Henry McGee. Tony the Tiger didn't live in the same house as Henry McGee and had to get tidied up after by Henry McGee. It's no coincidence that when Henry McGee died, Honey Monster's nowhere.
Well, yeah. Taking that inheritance and run with it.
Got put in a home. So, there should have been a scene where they were like, hey, you know, hey, I'm an 80s branding man. Hey, Ghostbusters, you're back. How about a rebrand? Yeah. How about this logo? And they look at it and it's the two and they go, no, that would have been a really good scene.
Yeah, that would have been good, actually. Yeah, I agree with that.
But no, they're having to wear it with no explanation at all. And we get in the montage, we get a section of a scene that was deleted where the car's going really fast.
Yes, because Ray's been possessed,
which we get later on, but it stops there. But apparently in the original cut, he was possessed for longer.
Yes, apparently so.
Yeah.
Which feels like it does kind of need that. For that sort of storyline, it feels like it just needs a little bit more than him staring gormlessly at the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so after the montage, Ray and Egon show off that they've made the slime happy by fucking it? Question mark?
Yeah. Do not question it.
They slept
with it. That's exactly what they've done.
Yeah.
Egon's poured it in a toaster, stuck his dick in it, and called it science. Which feels like something any of us would have done if Janine had walked in and was fucking a toaster.
Yeah, absolutely.
But honestly, trust me, there's an experiment that's going on here. It's not what it looks like.
It's just that I came in last night and you were feeding it up Ray's asshole.
It feels like the ghost blowjob of the first one was a slippy slope.
Now, I've got this as a note later. Yeah. I think Ray can now only get off if he thinks of a ghost sucking his dick. You know, and I think you would. I think if you had that, because in the first film it's a dream, but we do know it was a real scene, wasn't it? Where they had to spend the night in a fort.
Yes, it was.
And a ghost went, which one of these would I suck the dick of? I know, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's the writer, by the way.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It explains why he keeps turning up at haunted houses and just lying naked on top of the bed.
So the toaster, they make the toaster dance to Jackie Wilson. They do.
Yeah.
Which is another bit of foreshadowing.
It is, and it's nicely done, and it's a nice playful moment. Mm. I do worry that at some point in these new Ghostbuster sequels, we're going to get 50 CGI miniature dancing toasters.
Yeah.
Knobbing around all over the place like minions.
With no explanations, yeah, because now we've got loads of mini Stay Puffs like minions.
Yeah, which as a one-off scene, I was fine with. The idea that they're just going to come back every film. Mm. And yeah, there's no need. There's no need.
No. So then one night, the slime invades Dana's bath when she's about to bath Oscar.
Yeah.
And it's always lived with me how weird and plasticky the bath looks. That bit kind of wobbles about.
Yeah.
So she goes to see Peter.
That's where you'd go.
And he starts flirting with her again. And he puts Oscar in a big jumper.
He doesn't fucking give it a moment's breath, does he? No. From her coming in with the baby crying and her out of her mind with fear. Mm. And he's like straight into, listen, let's just get down to it. Mm. Good old Peter.
Yeah, come on, let's have it off again.
Yeah, he's a scamp.
Play it like that. Come on, let's have it off. Come on. I'm terrified, Peter. Just drop him. Come on.
Put the fucking baby down and get on the bed.
So then the next day they go to the museum and we get the great line that was in all the trailers. Suck it in, guys, we're the Ghostbusters.
Yes.
No, sorry. Suck in the guts, guys, we're the Ghostbusters.
Suck in the guts, guys, we're the Ghostbusters. I do like it. I like the fact that they're all slightly out of shape, middle-aged men.
It's great. And they also all go, it's very good. It's a good joke.
Yeah, it is. Solid.
And Ray gets taken over by Vigo's painting.
He does, yeah. Which, again, just feels like there's just not enough of it there. Mm. Like, it's a nice idea. But again, why is he trying to invade a child's body when he clearly can possess a grown man?
When he can easily possess a man who wants to fuck a ghost again. All I want to do is fuck a ghost again.
And it's the perfect combination because Ray wants to be penetrated by a ghost. Mm-hmm. So between the two of them, it would have worked out fine.
Oh, I want to have sex with John Vigo. Big break. Jim Davison and John Vigo.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've saved ourselves a scene where Ray's been mounted by evil Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, part as many balls as you can. That'd be a good one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.